SNI, Surgical Neurology International, a 2D internet journal, and SNI Digital, Innovations and Learning, a 3D video journal, are in association with the Sub-Saharan African Neurosurgeons, are pleased to present the Sub-Saharan Africa International Neurosurgery Grand Rounds, held the first Sunday of each month. This Grand Rounds is devoted to global solutions to clinical challenges in neurosurgery. The moderator is Estrada Bernard. There's an international audience. The second set of talks are on spinal cord tumors in the conus and cauda equina, challenges in the high-income and low- to middle-income countries. Dr. Michael McGaugh in neurosurgery, Dr. Callan Onyambu in radiology, and Dr. Minda Okiamwa in pathology, all at the University of Nairobi in Nairobi, Kenya, combined to make this presentation. In addition, there's a presentation from Jay Morgan, who is the head of Sierra Neurosurgery and Reno, Nevada. Michael McGaugh is a neurosurgeon at the University of Nairobi. He had training at the Groote Schuur Hospital at the University of Cape Town in South Africa, and worked at the Aga Khan University Teaching Hospital in Nairobi, and is the Secretary General of the Brain Tumor Association of Kenya. Dr. Okiyama is a pathologist, and Dr. Onyambu is a radiologist on this team. Both are at the University of Nairobi in Nairobi, Kenya. Jay Morgan is with Sierra Neurosurgery, a private practice neurosurgery group in Reno, Nevada. He's past president of the Western Neurosurgical Society and the president-elect of the Nevada Medical Association.
Welcome. I think this is our seventh edition of the SNI Digital Neurosurgery Grand Rounds for Sub-Saharan Africa. Dr. Osman is the leader of this, and he's not able to be here today, and so we have Dr. Epstein with us, who is the editor-in-chief of SNI, the Surgical Neurology International Journal, and she has great expertise in spine care and will be offering us her perspective on cauda equina syndrome. Welcome to everybody. And we're after Dr. Epstein's presentation and further discussion, we'll go with the Kenya group to discuss spinal cord tumors and management in Sub-Saharan Africa. So, Dr. Epstein, welcome again. You've been actively involved with us, and we love having your participation. Please go ahead and get started. Thank you.
Now, this is exciting. This will illustrate the difference in practicing in different regions. Right now, Kenya is a country of different extremes. We have the highest levels of practice all the way up in the private facilities and also in the public facilities. The main issue we have is literally just population-based, etc. This is a really simple case, but especially from your presentation, seeing how we ended up here, you'll see where there's a lot to go. So we need to think more about primary healthcare and patient advocacy and dealing with government, etc. Because this situation, in my opinion, didn't have to happen. Right. So let me start the presentation. So thank you, SNI Digital, for inviting us here. I'm part of the University of Nairobi and the University of Nairobi Neurosurgery. We're going to talk about just a simple case of cauda equina syndrome. My name is Dr. Emmy Magoha. I'm presenting with two of my colleagues. Dr. Callan Onyambu is a neuroradiologist. Dr. Minda Okiamwa is a neuropathologist. And Professor Nimrod Ngombe is a neurosurgeon and one of my teachers. Okay. Okay, so I'll keep it short and simple, but try and keep it fun. The patient we're presenting today is a 60-year-old female with no known allergies, comes from a location known as Kisii, Kenya, which is not in one of the central areas of Kenya, but it is a big town. She initially presented at peripheral facility with a history of back pain about 3 months prior. It was gradual in onset, sharp, lumbar, associated with radiculopathy to the right more than the left. She then continued getting progressive motor and sensory deficits. The radiculopathy was increasing. She could localize it mostly to the right side, and she noted difficulty in walking. At this point, she sought care in a peripheral facility where an X-ray was done, and then we didn't have information. She went home. When she went home, she noticed that she developed overflowing continence and fecal incontinence. But what worried her to look for more care was when she wiped herself, she noticed she didn't feel anything when she was wiping herself. So that was the main issue. Then she continued progressing to inability to walk, which was due to the weakness. She said the pain was excruciating, 9 out of 10 in the pain scale. And with regards to the weakness, her neuric grading was about 5. She was not able to ambulate without assistance at all. They were attributing it to age as she was about 63 years. The progression in this timeline is about 3 months. This is the issue that we're saying. She was seen in the beginning, just had an X-ray, didn't do anything until she couldn't walk, and they came now to the big hospital, as they like to say. Okay, with regards to physical examination, I'll keep it simple. The spine exam, all curvature was maintained. There was some lumbar tenderness and restricted lumbar movements. The paraspinal muscles on the right side were also tender. With regards to the motor examination, bulk was normal in the lower limbs, tone was normal in the lower limbs, power was decreased asymmetrically, which is important for us. The power was 1 out of 5 on the right lower limb, all muscle groups, and on the left lower limb, 2 out of 5, all muscle groups, going to the Medical Research Council grading. We'll move on to sensation. Of note, we didn't get a sensory level, but we did get saddle anesthesia with loss of anal tone and no anocutaneous reflex. With regards to the reflexes, she only had knee reflexes of 1 bilaterally, and with the deep tendon reflexes, 0 of the ankle. There was no Babinski reflex, which is expected. So from there, we went on to, so the summary of history in totality is we have a 65-year-old female with a 3-month history of progressively worsening back pain associated with radicular pain to the right leg, with loss of motor function in both lower limbs, and now presenting with urinary and fecal incontinence. Examination reveals limited range of motion, lumbar movements with reduced power in the lower limbs, preserved knee reflexes, loss of ankle reflexes, and reduced sensory examination findings with saddle anesthesia and loss of anal tone. Putting that all together, this is a patient who has caudate equina syndrome who appears about 3 months late, which is quite sad. What did we do? So immediately we rushed her into imaging, which is what you said. We can see here on the T2 images. In the central image, it looks like there's compression of the spinal cord at about T12, L1 by this lesion, which is here. When you move on to the right, the parasagittal image, you see a large lesion, which is at about T12, L1, which is compressing the cord and the nerve roots directly. If we continue, there we go. You can see it clearly now. If we go, you can see the lesion is right here and it's completely compressing all of the nerve roots, pushing it to the other side. This happened, according to her, over about 3 months or so. Interestingly, the first MRI, which was done in the peripheral center, did not mention this lesion at all. All they did was mention a disc herniation at L4, L5, which points to some of the issues that we have. You have to see the neurosurgeon. We have
Is
this
that
T.
because they failed to get axial studies going all the way up? Do you
Yeah.
think that's why they missed it?
That's why they missed it. So, and if we come here with the STIR image, the STIR reconstruction, we can see this lesion, which is here, right here at about T12, L1, compressing all of the nerve roots eccentrically. And you can see a little bit of myelomalacia within the cord itself.
Is there some foraminal extension of this that might make it a schwannoma or?
We didn't see it directly, but given this, we were thinking it. If I didn't put the DICOM images, but that is exactly what we were thinking, if I'm being honest. Because as you see here, in our imaging, we thought of it's a T12 L1 intradural extramedullary lesion that was isointense on T1 with avid contrast uptake, which was eccentric to the right, causing caudate equina syndrome. The first thing we thought of was either a meningioma or a spinal schwannoma. Lastly, was a neurofibroma. With that, we rushed her to the next available theater, and then this is what we did. So using fluoroscopic guidance, we aimed to have as you can see here, we don't really have markers, but we use the needle from T12 to L1. We went to have a two-level laminectomy that we did under fluoroscopic guidance. As we go through, you can see we cleaned and draped the patient. We opened and we did a simple standard laminectomy that you can see here. Unfortunately, whenever you want to show off is when things don't work. We weren't able to get the video from the operating microscope, but you can see our clear laminectomy. This is immediately after the surgery. What we found was a purely extradural lesion, extradural extramedullary lesion, which was not extending into the foramina, which was quite shocking for us. So we shifted, we argued if it was possibly a meningioma, but we'll find out what it was later. So the postoperative course at least was good. It was uneventful. She was discharged on day 3. At present, she's now ambulating with assistance, an increase in neuric grading of about 2 whilst continuing physiotherapy. She's in good spirits, but she is ambulating with a walker at present. With this, I'll go to Dr. Kemmer will discuss the histopathology of what we found. Dr. Kemmer?
Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Professor and the other audience. I'm Dr. Kemwa. I want to give a chance to my resident, Dr. Bure, if she's in. Dr. Bure, can you present the histology findings?
To share or just continue. Okay, so for the bio data, this was MM, a 63-year-old female, as has been shared by Dr. Magoha, who presented to the facility with lower back pains for 3 months and right lower limb weakness for 2 months with urine and bowel incontinence for 1 week. So we received a spinal cord tumor specimen from the T12 to the L1 region on gross. It was a whitish brown soft tissue specimen, which was measuring 10 by 10 and was tan white on cut sections. And we processed all of it in one cassette. So the radiological, radiology, we had the T12 L1 intradural extramedullary tumor with mild enhancement. And intraoperatively, there was a pinkish tumor resected with clear arachnoidal tumor interface, the ventrolateral aspect of the cone. So microscopy, the section showed a benign nerve sheath tumor with a biphasic pattern of alternating high cellularity, that is Antony A, and low cellularity, that's Antony B regions. The highly cellular regions had interlacing spindly cells with palisading nuclei. And we know this usually forms the verrucate bodies. And the lowly cellular areas, the Antony B areas, had the thick hyalinized blood vessels with loose microcystic stroma and scattered macrophages. So there were also some large atypical nuclei, and this was indicative of the ancient degenerative changes that we usually see with schwannomas. So we made a diagnosis of a spinal schwannoma, and we did immunohistochemistry. So S100 was strongly positive, EMA was negative, GFAP was negative, and a K67 index, we had a K67 index of 2%.
Okay.
Yes. So microscopy, what you're seeing, this is, you can see a tumor, and we can clearly see a biphasic pattern. So this where the black cursor is, we have this. That's the Antony B area. You can see it's loosely cystic and not too cellular compared to the opposite section. Yes, that is the Antony A. You can see the spindly cells showing a very highly cellular pattern. And then we can see areas of hemorrhage on the opposite, on the next, yes, this is a higher power. Power 20, you can see hemorrhage, a clear zone of hemorrhage and hyalinized vessels. Since I'm not controlling the cursor, I can see this is a verrucate body. We can see the fibrillary process and the spindly palisading cells, yes, around it. So we can clearly see the Veruque bodies or the Veruque body in this particular photomicrograph. Again, very diagnostic of schwannoma. So these were some of the immunohistochemistry stains that we did. So you can see this was S100, and clearly you can see very diffuse positive pattern of S100 staining. Again, this is very diagnostic of schwannomas. We did the EMA. Again, EMA was negative for this particular tumor. The GFAP, also IHC, was negative for this particular tumor, as you can see here. And then we have a very low Ki-67 index. As you can see, some areas of staining at 2%. And again, for schwannomas, we do not expect a high Ki-67 index because of their very low malignant transformation. So again, this is in keeping with the diagnosis of it being a schwannoma.
Thank you, Dr. Albert. That was excellent. And now with that, this kind of illustrates the problem. That was a simple, straightforward surgery. The main issue was presentation and timing of the patient. This is an image from when I graduated from neurosurgery with Professor Mwangombe and with Professor Sunil Patel, who was an external examiner at the time. This was the workforce of neurosurgeons at the time. The next picture that we have is the last graduating class, and you can see how many have grown. Since Professor Mwangombe started the program, we have graduated 45 neurosurgeons. I think that's about since 2011, and we still keep growing. So at least we're targeting the healthcare workforce as of now. Thank
Where
you for
are
your
the
attention.
There.
Here's one.
There's one.
Okay,
you need
and then
more.
There's another.
Okay.
You have to convince them to join. It takes a long time.
Uh-huh. Okay. Just as long as you keep track.
Yeah, and we are keeping track. If you want to contact me again, you can follow me on social media. This is my official email. This is my last book. Thank you for your attention, and I think we can start the discussion.
Well, thank you very much, Michael. That was a very nice case and excellent discussion. Would you comment on how you approach the surgical removal of the tumor?
So it was a simple, straightforward surgery. After doing the two laminectomies, the team found the tumor eccentric to the right. It was covered by a layer of arachnoid tissue. It was large, pinkish, not intradural, no vasculature. More importantly, it was not contiguous with any of the nerve roots, which is what we were looking for. So to be very honest, the tumor delivered itself, because upon a dissection around the lesion itself, it popped out en masse.
Oh,
the problem is it's sad. It makes it sadder for the patient, because this shouldn't have happened at all. If she was identified early, it shouldn't have reached this far. And for it to just be that diagnosis, that's what brings a learning point. Not everything has to be hard. Sometimes the changes are just very simple. I think that's why Professor Mwangombe picked this case instead of us trying to show off any fancy cases or fancy equipment.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting that it just pops right out. Oftentimes with those large tumors, you have to do a central decompression in order to adequately get immobilized safely. Mm-hmm.
But I think it also brings up another point, and that is, you know, especially if these are emergent, middle of the night, whatever, corticoid syndromes, you should be doing the simplest operation possible to get that patient on and off the OR table to do the adequate decompression. It's not the time to do a fancy multi-level instrumented fusion and all that other kind of stuff. Do you guys agree?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think if you're not, and that's certainly is not the case here, if you're not needing to remove so much structure as to destabilize the spine, there's no reason to talk about doing a fusion. Yeah. Just do a decompression, do an adequate exposure, and remove the offending lesion. So was this a sporadic case? Was there any issue any family history of spinal cord tumors or other tumors in this
No,
patient?
No, she didn't have any family history of spinal cord tumors, which was interesting. Of note, oh, I already said it before. We had a two-level increase in the neuric grading, so she's doing better. I don't know if she'll get much more than that, but at least now she's able to ambulate. With regards to the saddle anesthesia is still present, obviously. And bowel and bladder function, that's the next step, but that's going to be a long journey. But the main point of this is we should not get here. That's the one thing that I want all of the residents to know, etc. You should be telling everybody at any point when you see any neurologic deficit, any of the signs, as you told us quite rightly, it doesn't have to be a full. As long as you get any one of the signs, send them immediately for an MRI. Chase them up for an MRI, get a member of your staff to keep looking for the patients, calling the patients, because you can avoid a lot of things. I think that's the main learning point from us. But I'd like
and
to
I
leave.
Think it's, yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And getting the ancillary personnel educated on this, you've got to get, you know, your nurses, your emergency room physicians, your hospitalists, I mean, everybody else who's seeing these people, your PCPs or your equivalent of that. They have to know what this is, and it's not a total syndrome. It could be a partial, but yeah.
And Mike, how often are you seeing spinal cord tumors in your practice there at University of Nairobi?
Oh, that's there every week. Every week
oh,
we see
really?
Spinal tumors. Yeah, every week. Lots of ependymomas, lots of ependymomas, meningiomas, schwannomas, just the usual ones. Every now and then, holocaud astrocytomas and the ones that we're not sure what to do with them.
Yeah.
Especially if you think this one is late, some of the ones that we could show you would make it would make you quite sad on what to do. So I think that highlights the main issue that we have. Even as we build the workforce, there's a lot more needed than the surgeon themselves. And as I say this, it's not just to you, it's even to the residents. They can affect a lot of change just by getting out of there and just talking to people, saying, hey, did you know that this exists? So I think that's the battle that we're facing, which is interesting.
So there's a question in the chat about sacrificing the nerve, but I think you did mention that there was no apparent nerve involvement that you could discern.
Yeah, we need to be very honest. As a team, two things are noted, especially from the notes, is this. Number one, we all expected it to be intradural extramedullary. So we got to it way before. Number two, it just popped off. There was no need for resection or anything or any of those hard decisions. That being said, we did have SSEPs and MEPs available during the surgery. So
did
that
they
was good.
Improve? Were they absent?
Yes. No, there was 25% improvement. Though it was quite low. I do not remember the numbers, but there was a 25% improvement. I do remember that.
So I'm curious, why did you think it was intradural?
From the first image, from the presentation and the first image and the length of time, I didn't think it would be that. I thought the spinal cord compression, I didn't think it would be that. That's why I thought it would be intradural.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if on the sagittal or coronal images it could have been discerned that the dura was that it was on the lateral aspect of the dura. Just curious.
I think it's the first mid-sagittal image that I put up. It looked like it was intradural. It was ill-defined intradural. I wasn't expecting a globoid eccentric lesion at all from the first image, the first T1 image. Yeah.
So are these
NMR with gadolinium might have helped with that differential.
Yes. Sorry.
You did have gadolinium, didn't you? Yes.
Yes,
so
I did.
I just want to go ahead.
No, we didn't have gadolinium. It was tracing the images. Because the DICOM images, the DICOM images were split. They don't save everything on the hard disk. That was it.
Yes.
We did not need to sacrifice the nerve, Professor Jimmo. That's the issue.
So
when I was saying we didn't find the root nerve. We have to be honest. Sometimes you don't find. So I didn't find any source at all. Yeah.
And another point I want to reiterate is the importance of doing the physical examination in the context of Dr. Epstein's lecture and in this presentation, in that the manifestations described can be attributable to a lesion in the thoracic spine. So you talk about bilateral lower extremity weakness, you loss of bladder and bowel functioning and sensory changes. So it's the importance of the examination discerning whether they're upper motor neuron signs. I wish there was a medical student or resident I could ask what some of the upper motor neuron signs would be. And then of course doing the appropriate sensory examination to determine where the level is, whether is there a thoracic level, is there a saddle anesthesia. So just the importance of doing the basics, taking the history and doing a good neurologic examination. Is there somebody, Dr. Magoha, that you can ask someone in training regarding upper motor neuron signs that they would look for?
Yeah, and they better make me look good. There's Dr. Alwi Rashid, Dr. Ridwan Ibrahim. I think they're up to the task.
He's smart. He's
Dr. Ibrahim, he can't.
Dr. Ibrahim would be a good one. He's one of the few residents who will be going back to Somalia. There are way fewer than us. I think it's less than five or so. So he'll have bigger problems than us.
Okay. While we're waiting for one of them to respond, Dr. Morgan, welcome, Jay. Dr. Morgan has his hand up. Go ahead, Jay.
Sorry. There's also Dr. Gidinji who can answer that question. Sorry. Yes.
Hi. I sent you a text, Estrada, but I just had a case, Michael McGaugh, that occurred over 23 hours. Patient presented with weakness in the lower extremities, had increasing bowel and bladder, and we got an MRI, and it was very difficult to tell what was going on, but there looked like there was an intradural lesion, and operated on it immediately. There was also blood in the at the base of the dura, and it ended up being a hemorrhagic pneumoma, which I haven't seen before, but I ended up taking that out at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and but the patient got just progressively worse while we were waiting for the MRI scan, which was quite interesting.
The patient hemorrhaged into the tumor, which is what precipitated.
Patient hemorrhaged into the tumor.
Yeah.
So was it an exophytic tumor with?
It was intradural.
Oh, it was intradural. Oh, okay.
Yeah, intradural. Okay.
Exophytic from the conus.
Yes. Well, actually, it wasn't on the conus. It was attached to the phylum. It was able to just resect it, but it was at the level of the conus. So I hadn't seen it before. But.
So the typical location for the myxopapillary ependymoma.
Yes.
But it was hemorrhagic.
It was hemorrhagic, and he had no symptoms prior to that. It occurred all within 23 hours. And he was transferred from another hospital. That's why it took so long.
Oh, wow.
And did you say it involved the phylum?
It did.
Okay.
It did.
Okay.
And CSF was bloody as soon as you opened up? Or no?
No, the CSF was fairly clear.
Did you save some of it for cytology?
No, not the CSF.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, we got a full resection of the tumor, and it was very large because I didn't know exactly. I thought it was an AVM initially when I opened because it was under pressure.
Because it was hemorrhagic.
Right, but as I opened the dura, it just popped out. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Thanks. Jay,
it's important sometimes those lesions are stuck to a lot of nerve roots, and then you can debride as much as you can, and then you usually give some kind of focal radiation or stereotactic radiation to the region, right?
Mm-hmm. Right, but it was not stuck to anything. We'll get full cranial spinal axis, do the brain or cervical spine yet, but we'll look there. We did the thoracic spine and continue.
Where are you located?
In Reno, Nevada.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we just
part of
that last week.
Yeah. Well, I think, Nancy, this is a great demonstration of recognizing the presentation and intervening in a timely fashion. As Dr. Morgan said, he was in the operating room at 3 o'clock in the morning, so he wasn't waiting until the light of day.
Exactly. One of the main issues we have with practicing here is sometimes you get these situations which are out of the textbook, and you know you're forced to do something because it shouldn't be a 3-month emergency. So that's one of the things to highlight. If looking forward, anybody looking about studies to do, follow up on any of these patients, we have them. So, and no one writes what to do with them. So we have to keep deciding where to go. So especially follow up, recovery, et cetera, anything else that could add spinal cord stimulation, all of these things. We have these patients, and I think we should showcase and highlight that that's one of the differences in practicing locally here. Because we know we're supposed to do that. If I'm on call in a private hospital, I'll do exactly what Dr. Morgan did. If I'm in the public hospital, we moved really fast after 3 months. You see the issue that we have, but we don't get to patients. So this is why the forum of SNI Digital is important. You get to see difficulties we have in management. And thank you for the opportunity.
No. Thank you. Now, did we get a resident or student to make a comment?
There's Samuel Givenchy who's there. I think they're all scared. Don't worry, you'll all pass.
Okay, all right. Okay, I will take it on. So if we're trying to differentiate upper motor neuron manifestation signs, we're going to be looking for hyperreflexia. We're going to be looking for across that adductor reflex, I often use that, looking for a Babinski response, an extensor plantar response, and of course, looking for the appropriate sensory level. Any other additions?
I can say what I use to teach practically. It's going to sound macabre, but most residents remember. So distinguishing upper and lower motor neuron lesions, always imagine there's the teacher and there's the students. So if you go to a kindergarten and you get rid of all of the students, that's a lower motor neuron lesion. Nothing can happen. Everything is gone. And then the converse is true. So if you go to the primary school and you get rid of all of the teachers, everybody's going to run wild. The students will be up in arms. They'll be everywhere. Everything will be increased up, up, up. So that's the little joke I tell them all the time.
Great. They'll be hyperreflexic. They'll have increased tone. Excellent. Exactly. That's a good way.
Babinski will be up going. Everything will be up, up, up if you get rid of the teacher.
Yeah. Excellent.
Well, actually, though, you know, the case that was just presented, and you know, your T12L1 lesion. How many lesions high up are missed on MRI scans, and how many of us forget that there is a thoracic spine above the lumbar spine, especially if the lumbar study is not diagnostic? I mean, I saw a patient, you know, a few weeks ago, and you know, the neurologist had sent the patient, and the patient had a unilateral foot drop, but had been there for a bit. And I looked at the MR, and I called him back, and I said, "This MR does not explain this deficit. You know, you've got to think of ALS or CIDP. And by the way, where's the thoracic study here?" I'm still, you know, I have to get back to him and find out what he thought. But, you know, it's like, look up is basically.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
And don't believe what the radiologist or neuroradiologist has read or overinterpreted into it, because especially if it doesn't fit. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's such a great point. I certainly have seen people who have lumbar degenerative disc disease, and they've been treated with the assumption that what's going on with respect to their pain is from the lumbar degenerative disc disease, and you do an examination, and they're myelopathic, and they've never have had the thoracic spine evaluated.
Yeah.
Excellent point. Well, any other questions or comments?
Yes, I just could Professor Epstein give us some comments on Cauda equinus syndrome and Conus medullary syndrome.
Oh, well, I mean, like we've been discussing, if it's a Conus syndrome, you know, you may have, because you're getting the distal aspect of the cord, you may get the upper motor neuron findings and not just the lower motor neuron findings that you're going to see with the typical Cauda equinus syndrome. I think that's the biggest difference. You know, you can get proximal weakness in both cases. You can get sensory findings, but the sensory deficit with the conus lesion is going to be a few levels above the lumbar spine. You may be getting T10, T11, T12, L1, depending upon what you're looking at. Whereas, you know, usually, you know, quadriquina, you're seeing like L2 distally. Am I right or wrong on that, Estrada?
And well, I think you're right, Nancy. I would also say with the conus syndrome, you might be more prone to have evolution of bladder and bowel disturbances as opposed to the motor changes that typically would sometimes herald the quadriquina syndrome.
Yeah.
Any other comments or questions? Well, this has been fantastic. Two excellent presentations from two great experts from different parts of the globe, and I appreciate all of the participants being here. And appreciate Dr. Morgan. He may have had to go back to check up on his patient, but just presenting, giving mention of that case that complements this whole discussion.
Still here.
Oh, okay. I didn't see you. All right, Jay. Yeah, thank you so much, Jay. Michael, excellent. We've valued the contribution from the group in Kenya and look forward to further participation. And Nancy, well, you're a part of SNI Digital, so I'm sure we'll always we'll see you again and look forward to your
Don't
participation.
Hesitate. I'd be right. Happy to, anytime.
Thank you. Thank you all so much. On behalf of Jim Osman, who put this all together and sponsors this, I want to thank you all. And I'm sure he'll be very pleased with the participation that we had today. So we'll sign off. The next one, will, as always, will be the first Sunday of January, and we'll be getting out the announcement and putting the program together within the next week or two. So thank you all very much, and enjoy the rest of the day or evening.
And thank you, Estrada, and thank you, Michael. That was great.
Thank you both. Good night. Estrada. It was fantastic.
Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
We hope you enjoyed this presentation. The material provided in the program is for informational purposes and is not intended for a use as diagnosis or treatment of a health problem or as a substitute for consulting a licensed medical professional. Please fill out your evaluation of this video to obtain CME credit and to help us improve our programming. You can make that evaluation on the homepage using the rating scale. This recorded session is available free on snidigital.org. Send your questions, comments, and requests for CME to Ausman@snidigital.org. The foundation supporting these journals believes there are many ways to learn. Surgical Neurology International, known as SNI, is a 2D internet journal. Nancy Epstein is the editor-in-chief. Its web address is sni.global. SNI Digital Innovations and Learning is a new 3D video journal, all interactive with discussion, all video, and both are free, available on the internet 24/7, 365. The web address of SNI Digital is snidigital.org. Surgical Neurology International has read in 239 countries since 2010 as the third largest readership of neurosurgical journals. And SNI Digital, now 8 months after publication, is viewed in 141 countries. It's an all-video neurosurgery journal. The foundation supporting these journals is dedicated to helping people throughout the world. In addition, the foundation has a medical news network, which is devoted to bringing truthful medical and science news to the world. This program is copyrighted by the James I. and Carolyn R. Ausman Educational Foundation. It's an IRS USA 501c3 operating charitable foundation. All rights are reserved. Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this program.